But first, tonight, the Phoenix Police Department is holding the third of 13 listening sessions aimed at fostering a dialogue between the community and law enforcement.
That attempt at creating conversation comes after President Trump held a rally in downtown Phoenix, and a protest outside ended in police dispersing the crowd of thousands with tear gas and pepper balls.
Police said officers made the move after a small group of protesters among the thousands began throwing rocks and bottles at the police, and the crowd began to run.
Just a week later, many of those protesters took over a Phoenix City Council meeting, demanding accountability from the police. So with tensions and stakes high, where can the community and the police go from here? And how can they work together to ensure protests are safe spaces to express political speech on both sides in the future? We wanted to dig into these issues a bit, so the show's Lauren Gilger spoke to a few folks about this, and she joins us now. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning. So I spoke with Michael Scott, the director of ASU's Center for Problem-Oriented Policing, and Rashad Shabazz, an associate professor at ASU's School of Social Transformation. Shabazz was at the protest last month, and Scott spent much of his career working in law enforcement. We started with what kinds of tensions and history underlie these kinds of protests. Here's Shabazz.
One of the main issues is that there exists a number of tensions between many of the groups that are protesting in the street. There's mistrust. There are numerous examples of violence against these communities. And so that tension tends to build over time. And I think because of those tensions, because of that mistrust, it's really difficult to have a gathering where those things don't come up. And there just hasn't been the space to have a conversation about these tensions between these organizations and these groups who are protesting in the street and police.
Do you think that's what the police department is trying to accomplish with these community meetings they're holding for the next month here after all of the, I guess, contention that happened at that protest?
I think that's definitely part of it, and I think it's a good start. However, I don't see this manifesting in the way that I think the police officers want or the police department would want. I think what the police department wants is to sort of come to some kind of understanding that, you know, here are the rules of engagement, here's what you can and can't do. And I think what many of these communities are grappling with are things like pain and suffering and fear, and those things can't be dealt with in community meetings. It's going to take time. It's going to take radical change amongst the police officers and police departments. It is a much deeper and much more complicated reality.
Yeah. And Michael, from the law enforcement perspective, I mean, law enforcement officers are not unaware of this history. They're not unaware of these tensions. But how do you think the police can stop from being seen as the enemy in this situation? How is it that police can try to seem neutral?
That's an art, but a critically important one. And it's especially difficult for the police because, like it or not, the police are and are perceived to be visible agents of government.
Right.
And they can't avoid that. They exist as agents of government. They exist in large measure to defend the government, to protect it, to uphold the rules of the government. So protest against the government, almost by definition, is in part protest against the police. But within that role, and this is the real challenge of effective policing, is to try to establish an impartiality and a neutrality in the context of political protest, to be able to convey to protesters of all stripes that we are neutral as to the message you're sending. We are here to do two things, to make sure that those who want to speak have their voice heard, and to prevent anybody from getting hurt and property getting damaged.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And so it's an important part of the policing of political protest is the appearance. And there's room for improvement to convey very strongly that the police are not partisan in these events.
I wonder, though, about the appearance, because so much of this imagery that came out of this protest in Phoenix was police in riot gear. Is there a way to not approach it from that point of view that already seems combative?
Yeah, the general shift in policing tactics and strategy on this over the years has been to de-emphasize the visible coercive force of the police, at least at the beginning of these events. And I think earlier in the day, the police had a non-threatening appearance. So the general approach today is to try to keep the riot-clad police out of public view and out of the area unless and until they are needed, to avoid creating this impression that trouble is about to happen, which has a subtle way of actually instigating some of that trouble.
So what I wonder is about that moment when things take a turn, right? When someone from the protest crowd throws something at police and they feel like they have to release the tear gas. What are, from a law enforcement perspective, the approaches they can take when something like that happens? If it is, like it was, seemingly a really small group of people from the protest doing this.
One basic approach is not to overreact, to try to quickly determine whether or not this is an individual, small group of people doing something aberrant, and then to deal with just those individuals and to prevent it from getting out of hand, or if the behavior actually represents the beginning of a larger movement against the police or against property.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't that happen, in your opinion, in this situation?
Well, this is, I think, an area in which the police appear to be being a bit more introspective, to question whether they resorted to the use of gas and to coercive force a bit prematurely without first trying to remove the individuals who were throwing the objects at the police. If it didn't happen, it's not because police would not have considered it. It could simply be a tactical decision made in the spur of the moment that may, on reflection, not have been the best decision.
And having been in that crowd, what I wonder is, what do you think the community needs out of these meetings that are going to be taking place with police over the next month here? Do you think that they can say anything that would be helpful?
I think accountability is important. I think also an apology in this context would be useful, because it is fairly clear that level of force to disperse thousands of people, you know, we were all running down, you know, 2nd and 3rd Street, you know, running away from the gas, was really unnecessary. You know, showing the slightest bit of remorse would be useful, because what we have seen through various police actions, whether it is the actions that we saw a couple of years ago right outside of St. Louis, whether it's Baltimore, you know, whether it's Los Angeles, wherever, you know, we tend to see police being truculent and not at all acknowledging any wrongdoing. So I think that might be, you know, one start. Whether or not this is going to create a sense of trust with the community is an entirely different thing.
One of the things that prompted this roundtable that made us want to talk about this was this idea that leading up to that protest and to that rally, we heard from people on both sides saying, you know, I would have gone, but I don't even want to go to protest or to support the president because it's gotten too scary. It's just too dangerous. And that seems anti-American in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Because free speech and the expression of that should be protected. I wonder what your response is to that.
I would agree that is almost the ultimate failure of a political protest, is if the outcome of it is to dissuade people from coming out again in the future. And it points to the importance of safety and security at these events for all sides. People have to have some confidence going to these events that their voice will be heard and they won't be injured in the process.
Yeah.
You know, I can agree that safety and security are important, and I think this is one of the reasons why we should not have armed men and women at political protests, police included. When you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when you have militiamen holding rifles, semi-automatic rifles, police in riot gear, in a state where it's legal to carry guns, it creates tension, anger, and fear. I didn't take my children, particularly my 8-year-old, I didn't take her because I knew there was going to be pepper spray, rubber bullets, and I knew there would be armed men at these protests. And we have to fundamentally rethink how our democracy is going to grapple with guns at political protests.
So then the question becomes, right, where do we go from here? With when you have protesters who really feel like the police cannot be trusted any longer, and then police and city leadership on the other side who are largely defending their actions, but also trying to listen to that community, where can we go from here?
Well, I would say the police are making an effort in these listening sessions to continue a dialogue about this. What did we do right? What did we not do right? My sense is that there is a great split in the Phoenix community as to whether or not, on balance, the Phoenix police handled this event properly or not. Very strong views on both sides. And so there are very different opinions about this. The willingness of the police to have these sessions, to be open to listening, to be open to improving and changing some, modifying some of their tactics and strategies in the future is necessary. And it's a welcome sign that the police have chosen to do that.
More conversation is necessary. The police are going to have to be involved in initiating that conversation, in being honest, in being willing to sit down and hear people's concerns, fears, and anxieties. And we have to also remember that the ghosts of Sheriff Joe Arpaio still reign heavily on the Phoenix Police Department, and his pardon just sends more chills and more fear and anxiety through community. So this will take time. It will require lots of conversation and patience.
Rashad Shabazz, Associate Professor at ASU School of Social Transformation, and Michael Scott, Clinical Professor and Director at ASU Center for Problem-Oriented Policing. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to the show.